Welcome to another Behind Enemy Lines, SEC version, OU Missouri this week. My name is Brandon Drum. Obviously, we have a new guest, none other than Missouri Today's, you say chief editor, right? Lead editor, chief editor?
Senior editor.
Senior editor. Gosh dang it. Senior editor, Kyle McCarvey, right?
Oh, I think you caught yourself a little bit trying to think it through too much. McCarvey,
dadgummit. McCarvey.
That's all right.
Dadgummit. I know, we just talked about it too, and I was like, dude, McCarvey. I'm going to go with what I thought. McCarvey. Yeah. So, yeah, it's Irish, right? That's got to be Irish, 100%, correct? Yeah, yeah.
Very much.
Do you have like Irish descent? Is that like as far as like, or like, do you have, how close is Irish descent like, as far as like coming over? I guess is what my question is.
I think it was my great grandparents.
Great
immigrated over.
That's
so, like,
really cool.
Dad's dad.
That's really cool.
I think my grandpa was maybe, you know, a year or two old when they came over, something like that. Or I'm a generation off, but it's not, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s.
That's freaking awesome. Like, I love diving into ancestry for some odd reason. Mm-hmm. Really big into that. I would imagine that you've probably seen, I guess Gangs of New York, the movie would be my bet. Yeah. I you had to have with Irish descent. That is like, that's like an epic Irish descent movie. So one of my favorites of all time, by the way. So just watched it the other day. It's a great movie. Great movie.
It's been a while since I've seen it. So
yeah.
Maybe I'll have to go back to it soon.
You should. Man. Obviously, I think you guys are 21 or 23, depending on, you know, I think the coaches have you at 21, AP 23, if I remember correctly. Oklahoma's 8 in both. This is such a big matchup, and it was always a kind of quasi-rivalry in the Big 8 and the Big 12, but the Eli Drinkwitz, Brent Venables aspect of it, the Caden Green, right? Chris McClellan Jr., like you've got all sorts of kind of twists and turns that have taken place over the last few years that have created this into something other than just a game. Does Missouri see Oklahoma as a rivalry at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still somewhat new to kind of mid-Missouri. I've been here since 2021 and covered the team basically that whole time. So it caught me a little bit off guard. I knew they were, you know, old Big 12, Big 8, all the bigs, you know, numbers through the years. And that they obviously had a long history. I didn't really get how much Mizzou fans cared about it until it was renewed last season for the first time in however long. Mizzou fans want to beat Oklahoma bad. And I mean, part of that is, you know, you were conference rivals for a long time. Obviously, Oklahoma's on the significantly more winning side of the matchup historically, right? So it was always, I'll add on, I went to Oklahoma State, so I know what it's like to be on the losing side of an Oklahoma rivalry.
Did you grow up in Oklahoma?
No, I grew up around Seattle. I went to Oklahoma State to major in sports journalism. But I'm saying, like, I know what it's like to be on the side of a rivalry with Oklahoma where you don't win as often. Mm-hmm. And so I think Mizzou fans kind of have that same mentality of, in the best seasons you have, part of that is beating Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the key to making it a great season is you take down Oklahoma. And, you know, that was, Mizzou fans were very, very excited about it last year, even going in with a third string quarterback and, you know, maybe a little disheartened because they had just, maybe it was the week before, lost their third game and kind of got knocked out of the playoff. But that became then like the next big thing was you could still salvage the season by beating Oklahoma.
And, you know, Eli Drinkwitz post game, we were just talking about this, you know, off camera, OU doesn't whoop Missouri's ass all the time anymore, or something to that extent, kind of
Something
paraphrasing a
like
little
that.
bit. But yeah, I mean, like, he's egging this thing on. You have the Williams-Winery aspect to it as well, which was like just such a, that thing took a life of its own a little bit. The celebration where he jumps up in the arms of the coaches and stuff like that. The OU fans love to, throw jabs at that. But at the end of the reality is they lost out on a five star to Eli Drinkwitz. And I think at that point is where the flip kind of switched. And Oklahoma went from, it's Missouri to, you know what? F Missouri, like that's kind of where their mentality went. It's an odd rivalry at this point. But if you go back to right before Missouri left the Big 12, they were almost annually meeting in the Big 12 championship game, it felt like, or like every other year. And I know, what years were you at Oklahoma State?
2013 through 18.
So you were there during the good years. Like
There were,
no,
yeah.
you got to
Other
see the
than,
punt return. You got to see.
I was going to say, so 2014 was a bad team overall, but that's the only time I saw a Bedlam win.
Oh, that's
And it was
true.
on the, and it was on the punt return.
2013 should have been because of the, that was the Ice Bowl game. Oh, that was so cold.
That game was so cool.
It was brutal, brutally cold.
That was awful.
Brutally cold, and you got the chicken wings and the trip, and like, oh man, that we could go on and on about that rivalry. But anyways, yeah, just Missouri fans, obviously, they're still in the playoff race. Like they're on the outside looking in right now. I know, but like you beat Oklahoma, does the mentality change a little bit to where you've got a chance? Because I think you've got Arkansas is your last game, right? You beat Oklahoma, and if things fall, they would have to be perfect, obviously, for Missouri, but there it's not a zero sum game that they can't make the playoffs at this point. Is that still a topic of a conversation up there?
I think it's kind of gotten to a point where Mizzou fans have not let go of playoff aspirations, but that has moved to the far back of the mind. Like
Yeah.
it's kind of a three loss team. I don't think any three loss teams made it last year.
No. They were saying Oklahoma and
Is
Missouri or Oklahoma and Texas would be the three lost teams that could make it. But you beat
right.
Oklahoma,
So I think.
I know you being top
Yeah,
10.
so right. So I think it's still kind of it would be unprecedented for a three loss team to make this playoff. So I
Right.
think even with a win against Oklahoma, that kind of I think the thought process for Mizzou right now is more to play spoiler and take Oklahoma out of contention versus getting Mizzou in contention because Mizzou has already kind of failed when given the opportunity against Alabama and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, they haven't beaten a ranked team yet, obviously, this year. I think that's the stat I saw and read earlier today. But be that as it may, you have a Mod Hardy. And we'll talk about Bo Perbula here in just a minute and Zollers and all them. But a Mod Hardy, that dude's ran for like 1,300 plus yards this year, going up
Yeah, I
against
think
one
he's
of
at
the.
1346 now.
Yeah. He just had a 300 yard game last week. I mean, let's not pretend like he's not one of the best running backs in all of college football. It was like Missouri lost a running back that everybody thought, oh, there's no way they can be better. Zero chance. Yeah, they might be better running the ball this year. Just might. Has he been kind of a surprise a little bit in how well he's ran the ball?
So I think it was after week five, maybe, that was asked in a post game press conference, like hey, to drink was like, hey, did you expect him to be this good? And I think his quote kind of put it pretty perfectly, which is he expected him to be good. Nobody expected this good, right? Because Hardy
Right.
had right about. He's right about it, his total yards from last year at Louisiana Monroe. He was like third in the country among running backs in regular season play He didn't play a bowl, and then some of the running backs who were above him in missed tackles forced in yards after contact ended up being in the playoff. I think it was Scatabu and Jonty were ahead of him, and then a couple others passed him at the end. But if you just take the 12 regular season games, he was third with those two. So there was a thought like it would translate. The skill set would translate, but how much? Because did anybody expect that he would put up a 300-yard game in SEC play? Probably not. Did people expect maybe he could be a 1,000-yard rusher again? I think the answer is probably yes, especially in Mizzou's system, which kind of fits well with him and has produced multiple kind of top-tier running backs across the last 4 or 5 seasons.
So again, I think Oklahoma's fourth in rush defense, Missouri's sixth in rushing offense. I believe Missouri averages, just wrote it down here, 241.7 points or yards, 241.7 yards a game. Oklahoma only gives up 82 yards a game. You look at that matchup and you look at the possibility Bo Perbula playing right. You look at the possibility of Matt Zolars being the quarterback. It's kind of a, you call it cautiously optimistic that Bo Perbula comes back. Zolars, he hasn't been horrible, but he
He's
hasn't
been a
been.
true freshman starting
He's
his
been a,
first two
that's what
games.
I was going with. He's been a true freshman. How do you see the matchup with OU's D line, OU's front seven versus Missouri's front? Because it feels like that's kind of the matchup at play here with the run game, right? Hey, Sooners fans, we'll get you right back to the video. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, SeatGeek. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. SeatGeek is also the official ticket marketplace for the Oklahoma Sooners, so all Sooners tickets on SeatGeek are authentic and secure. I love using SeatGeek. We already used it with my family to buy Oklahoma Sooners home games. We are going to use it again for Missouri and LSU. We used it for Shane Gillis earlier this season, the concert. We used it for Dave Chappelle. We used it for Oklahoma City's professional team. When they were making that run for the title, we used it. SeatGeek is not just a place to buy tickets, but it's also a place to make sure you're getting a good deal on your purchase. So if you're wondering if you're spending too much or being overpriced, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale from 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. So look for the green dot, which green means good, red dot, red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. After we tell you all those cool features, of course, OU Insider has a code for you guys. So you can use the code OU Insider to make sure you get your 10% off your next ticket purchase on SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo OU Insider. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app so that you have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
Yeah, Missouri's offensive line has not been incredible against top-tier defensive fronts. Like you mentioned, Hardy ran for 300. That was against Mississippi State. And Mississippi State is, I think, like 110th in rush defense this year out of what we got like 136 FBS teams now. Mississippi State's front is not good. They haven't been able to stop the run against anybody. You put a very talented back up against that, he's going to have a successful day. Now he had a, 300 is not just a successful day.
No, that's
But like
records.
against Auburn, right? But you go against Auburn, which is a very strong defensive front, and Hardy was kind of bottled up because the offensive line specifically wasn't able to open up any lanes for him. He's been very good at getting yards after contact and breaking tackles. And I think against both Alabama and Auburn, he had more yards after contact than total yards, which kind of gives you the story of those games where he's doing everything he can and the offensive line is getting him hit in the backfield consistently. So I think Oklahoma's defensive front is probably going to overpower Mizzou's offensive line just because it hasn't been very good when it's faced top tier fronts.
Is there confidence with Oklahoma? They gave up close to 400 yards passing a couple of times this year. I know they did against Alabama, LSU, and or excuse me, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. Their pass defense, it's been a bend but don't break type, pass defense. Missouri, not known for the passing. You have obviously you have Ahmad Hardy, who has, I think he's back-to-back years with 1,300 plus yards, but he's definitely going to break that and more this year. Like the surprise to me when I asked that question earlier was Missouri almost has to run the ball, kind of like Alabama has to pass the ball, right? Because there's no run game with Alabama. Inversely, it feels like the passing game's been a little bit of a struggle, even with Bo Perbula. With Missouri. Again, they're 89th, and I believe Oklahoma isn't much better in their pass defense. I want to look because the ranking, the new stuff just came out this morning as far as like the actual pass defense rankings. But Oklahoma can't be much better, right? As far as like pass defense allowed. Where do you see this game playing out as far as through the air goes? Oklahoma's 37th in pass defense, but that's a little bit fabricated, right? That's padded. The last three games has not been great for Oklahoma pass defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on if Bo Prabil is able to play and how healthy he is, which even the, what, three-ish games before he got hurt, the Mizzou passing game was not exciting, is the
Right.
most charitable way I can put that. With Zollers, it's been pretty limited because he's kind of limited at this point. He's a true
Yeah, he's a
freshman.
fresh freshman.
He just made a second start. Like, you don't expect a lot of, I think he's 19. So you don't expect a lot of 19-year-olds who just got to college football and didn't play a senior year of high school because of an injury to be up to speed at this point. But because of how stout Oklahoma's run defense has been, Mizzou's going to have to turn to the air. And if Prabula is able to go and he's functionally healthy, it's certainly a more threatening pass offense than if Zollers is back there right now. Just because he's a bit more accurate when it comes to intermediate passing, specifically. Zollers was fine this past week in short routes, kind of like the easy throws that you scheme up for a guy. He was fine with those this week, and that worked out pretty well. But anything that's kind of 10 to 20 yards has been kind of consistently high. He's still maybe a little overexcited, and trying to fire the ball a bit too hard, so it's sailing on him a bit. The deep balls tend to be a little bit better, but you can't pull those out every play, you
Right.
know? So I think if Preville is back and, like I said, functionally healthy, if he's back and not 100%, then I'm not real confident in Mizzou's ability to throw the ball. But if he's back and feeling good again, you know, it is an offense that can challenge you through the air, even though it really hasn't since SEC play began outside of South Carolina.
I see Missouri's given up 22 sacks this season total. Has the offensive line struggled in pass blocking as well? Only asked that because Oklahoma essentially is one, them and A&M are one as far as like sacks this season. I think A&M now has one more than Oklahoma with 38. Oklahoma has 37 total sacks this year. They're averaging, both essentially averaging four sacks a game. Is that something, obviously you worry about it, but is that something that you're watching for, you're cognizant of going into this matchup? Like you feel like there's a individual matchup or something to that extent that you're like, okay, Missouri can get successful on the offensive side of the ball if, you know, Caden Green can block, obviously, or Mason Thomas, but they have Taylor Wine as well. So, like something to that extent, or is Missouri stronger at tackle, guard? Like, where do you see their strength is on the offensive line?
They're definitely stronger at tackle. Caden Green's out at left tackle this year. Keegan Frost is at right tackle. They've both been pretty consistently good. After the start of the year, it took Green a couple of weeks to kind of adjust out to left tackle. He was at left guard all of last season, got kicked out to tackle about 2 weeks before the season started. But since the start of this season, he's been solid there. The interior of Mizzou's line has been a problem. I think the sack number that you brought up specifically has a little bit more to do with Bo Prabula than with the line itself. The interior of the line has not been good, but the way that Prabula operated in the pocket tended itself toward more sacks. He would kind of, instead of like standing in and stepping up if the pocket was collapsing or trying to just fire off a throw before somebody got to him, his first reaction was to like hit the eject button and try to find a way out.
Right.
And that led to a lot of situations where, you know, as he's trying to scramble out, he sees a little bit of a hole, maybe between left tackle and left guard, tries to skirt through there, and then he's down on the ground because one of them is able to get off their block enough to bring him down. And then that's a sack. It was a lot of that type of stuff where if he had maybe a little bit better pocket presence, or maybe his instinct wasn't just, let's go, get out, that number might look a little bit better. But Missouri's offensive line in pass protection has had a lot of struggles this year, and it tends to specifically come from the interior.
Is, for you, just offensively, like, what do you think Missouri has to do to be successful against this Oklahoma defense that so many people have struggled to score points on this season?
Man, that's a tough question just because it's so much of a strength on strength matchup in the run game, right? Mm-hmm. Rush offense is what makes Missouri go, especially recently. If they're unable to get 150 rushing yards, I don't have a lot of faith in the offense's ability to make that up through the air. The real hope that I think Mizzou would have is for the defense to hold up through the full game. Even in Mizzou's losses, it's been a situation where the defense played generally fantastic and just never got enough help from the offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it was, it started with Alabama. It was kind of the same thing with Vanderbilt. The defense played great all the way through, and then the offense just never took advantage and was never able to generate a lead like you would hope. And then Alabama and Vanderbilt were able to hit one key play at the end of the game and come out with one score wins.
Right.
Texas A&M was kind of a different thing. You're starting a true freshman for the first time, not really expecting the offense to do anything. And that ended up being a big Texas A&M win. I will say that's the most impressed I've ever been with a defense that gave up, I think, 39 points, something like that, and 400 plus yards, because the Mizzou defense played great through the first half. Mizzou's offense gave up a fumble recovery that was returned to the two right before halftime. Instead of a 7-0 lead at halftime, it's a 14-0 lead at halftime. And then in the second half, a fake punt by Texas A&M kind of broke Mizzou's back. The Tigers had gotten a stop on third down. They give up the fake punt. That leads to another touchdown. Now it's a 3-score game, and it just kind of spirals. But the Missouri defense has been fantastic. So I think,
yeah.
I know you asked about the offense and how the offense scores on Oklahoma. I don't think that's the way Mizzou wins the game. I think the way Mizzou wins the game is keeping Oklahoma out of the end zone and, you know, trying to make it a 17-10 win or something like that.
So with that, you brought up The Missouri defense, really, really good defense. Obviously, it feels like it's going to be a defensive matchup game. Oklahoma, I think they're fifth, sixth, seventh in total defense, something to that extent. I believe Missouri was, if I remember correctly, I think 13th, 14th, something like that.
Oh, yeah, top 15-ish, I think.
Yeah. I know they're like top 25 in tackles for losses too. I was just looking at that. Oklahoma's won with 102 tackles for losses this season. Indiana comes in at two with 93, and then A&M with 83. The total defense rankings. Oh, Oklahoma's dropped to 11th in total defense. Missouri is at, well, trying to find it here. Yeah. They're a really good defense. I'm not looking at scoring defense, which matters more than yards per game, by the way. So yeah, and they played some pretty stout offenses, so that's gonna jack up the yards a game. Do you call them a bend but don't break defense, essentially? Just kind of not gonna allow a lot of points. You may get some yards on them, but they're not gonna give up a lot of points.
Yeah, that's generally what it's been. They've done a good job. I think let me see how to phrase this. Mizzou's coverage tends to play a pretty soft zone a lot of the time, so teams are generally able to kind of pick it apart at certain points, and you can kind of put together a sustainable drive, and maybe chunk off 30, 40 yards or something, and then Mizzou will work its way in for a sack, put you off schedule, and then you're not able to get far enough, turns into a punt. So, what maybe you spent 30 yards looking like you're cruising, doing pretty well, easy passes, and then one play goes wrong, you're off schedule, now you have to punt. That tends to be the style of Mizzou's defense. It's also done a pretty good job at getting three and outs, especially early in games, trying to, keep offenses from getting into that early rhythm. But end of game situations have been an issue recently because the defense is usually on the field for significantly too long because the offense is unable to sustain drives.
What do you feel like is their strength as far as the front, the secondary? Like, if you were going to pinpoint Missouri's strength, I kind of think it's probably their secondary is really, really freaking good. It feels like Torian Pride, I think is his name. Torian Pride Jr., right? Correct. Corner stud, absolute stud. Yeah, obviously you've got Chris McClellan on the front. OU fans are well aware of him. Got some really strong players. Linebacking cores seems to be pretty stout as well. But if you were going to name a unit that you looked at and said, this unit has to play well to win this ball game, as far as on the defensive side, where would you say?
I'd probably, if I was to pick a specific position, it'd be the edge rushers. If I was to pick a unit, it'd be the front seven. You bring up the secondary. That's been kind of the only spot that's had major issues at times this year. It's been significantly better the past handful of weeks. It was early in the season. There was a lot of issues with getting beat over the top, which is part of the reason that they play that soft zone that I was talking about. But they are helped a lot by a very strong group of edge rushers. Damon Wilson was the number one defensive end available in the transfer portal. I think he was the number one non-quarterback available in the transfer portal, and he's been
He was good.
excellent this season. Zion Young was a pretty top-tier guy in the portal last year, and has been fantastic this season. Both of them are shooting up draft boards and looking at very realistic, like, back end. Wilson, maybe a back end day one pick, Young an early day two pick at this point. You mentioned Chris McClellan in the middle. He's been fantastic. Josiah Trotter is the primary linebacker. He was one of the higher rated players available in the portal this year and has been great. And then they've got a couple other guys in Khalil Jacobs, Tristan Newsome, and Nicholas Rodriguez at linebacker, who have all been solid to very good. It kind of switches off between which one of them is very good that week. Each one has had times where they've been great alongside Trotter, and then each one has kind of had a week or two where they've taken a step back. But especially the whole front in run defense has been fantastic, and those edge rushers have been really good at pass rushing so far this year.
We'll get you right back to the video, but first I want to thank one of our sponsors, Refine You Med Spa. Achieving a healthy weight can be challenging to do on your own, but you're not alone. The skilled team at Refine You Med Spa offers treatments that complement weight loss goals and long-term weight loss support, so you achieve a weight that supports good health and self-esteem. You can achieve your ideal look and feel with Refine You state-of-the-art practices that offers a diverse selection of aesthetic treatments, providing services that benefit every body shape and skin type. Whether you got skin tags, sunspots, whether you want to lose weight around your midsection, they offer the P shot, the O shot. Whether your girlfriend or fiance or wife loves Botox, lip filler, Daxxify, all that type of stuff, laser treatments as well, skin tightening, skin surface treatments, all of that. They have that for you at Refine You Med Spa. You can do that with like a gift card. I use those all the time for my wife at Refine You Med Spa. It's a great, great gift, whether it's Christmas, Valentine's Day, anniversary, birthday, what have you. Refine You Med Spa has also been the number one rated med spa in Oklahoma City by 405 Magazine for the past 6 consecutive years. They don't sell procedures, they sell results. So make sure you give the team at Refine You a call at 405-849-5391 or go to refineyouokc.com to set up a free consultation. You bring up Zion Young. Paul, you bring that name up, and probably OU fans just shake their head in horror because he's the DN that picked up the Jackson Arnold fumble and brought it back for a touchdown. But you brought up some other name. Or you brought up the secondary. Let's just go there. You brought up some other names, though. But as far as the secondary goes, it's like a who's who of OU fans. If you follow recruiting or if you follow the transfer portal and you know Oklahoma's interests in any bit of it, whether out of high school in the transfer portal, Jalen Catalon, Trey Norwood, who's the cousin of Trey Norwood, who was a 4-year starter at Oklahoma at cornerback out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, Torian Pride, who played for Brent Venables. I mean, there is a lot of connection there. Of the names that I just kind of threw out to you, we talked about Torian Pride, right? He's kind of the guy that everybody looks to and says that's their best player in the secondary. So throw him out. Outside of Torian Pride, who is the best player in the secondary for Missouri?
I think it's pretty safe to say it's Dalen Carnell, who not one of the names you brought up, but a 5-year guy in the program, a 3-year starter now. He was a rotational guy in 2023, right? Or 22. Yeah, in 2022. Starter 2023, 2024 this year. There we go.
I
Years
didn't
get a
bring
little
up
mixed up
Burks, by
sometimes.
the way. Marvin Burks. I totally forgot about him.
Also,
He's,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, also been much better kind of second half of this year. Seems like he's kind of figuring it out as he's getting toward the back end of his second year as a starter. But Dylan Carnell is really he was the leader of the defense kind of coming into the year. He was one of the mainstays who's been around for a long time. Obviously, longest tenured starter in the group. You know, one of the only ones who's been around for more than 2 years and didn't come through the portal as the starters. I mean, it's him and Burks and Marquise Gracial at defensive tackle now, who didn't come out of the portal. Pretty much everyone else that starts came out of the portal. So I would say it's Carnell out of the secondary who was kind of the top tier guy. He's been a little quieter this year than I expected. He could have left for the NFL last year, but was kind of last year's safety class was really, really strong for the draft, and he was further down draft boards than if he had just stayed at the same stock he would be this year, just because of the amount of those top tier guys that went to the league last year. But he hasn't really taken the noticeable step forward that I expected this season. He's still very good, but I expected coming into the year to see him go from very good to great, and I don't think we've seen that yet.
The other thing is like with this type of matchup being defensive, and I think we probably, you probably would agree with me that probably not going to be very high scoring, just if I was going to guess, just off of what we know of both defenses and what they're capable of doing and what they are. Comes down to kicking. And much like Oklahoma, Missouri's pretty freaking good at kicking. Like I think you guys use two kickers. I've watched Missouri enough this year to where I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, they have a long distance kicker that is like a 45 plus guy, and they have a kicker that is more of a 40 yards in type of kicker.
They do. Yeah, I would say that's because they're not very good at kicking. Week one, they had Blake Craig, who was expected to be the starting kicker, came in, was pretty good last year, anywhere but 40 to 49 yards. For some reason, 40 to 49, he was just flatly bad, and then great again from 50 plus. Weird situation, but seemed like he was set to kind of take another step forward as a redshirt sophomore. Week one, he tried to make a tackle on a kickoff with Mizzou up by 30 and tore his ACL. So he's been out. Robert Meyer initially took over the kicking duties. He has struggled to the point where it has changed Mizzou's strategy on fourth downs and kind of the math of where to go for it on the field pretty consistently throughout the season, which reasonably might have won them the game against Kansas because they went for, I think, six fourth downs and got most of them that game, and that led to multiple touchdowns that instead would have been field goals, and I think mathematically would have made the difference. At other times, that situation, Meyer hit a field goal off the uprights against Vanderbilt that would have put Mizzou ahead 13 to 10 in the fourth quarter. Instead, that kind of breaks the back of the Mizzou defense a little bit. They give up a big play. After that, Vanderbilt goes up 17-10, and I think that ended up being the final score. And it's become a situation where they are the reason they use two kickers is because they're not confident in Meyer's ability to hit from past 40. So another guy, Oliver Robbins, who handles kickoffs, comes in on those deeper attempts. He came in for the first time against Texas A&M and was talked about as, this booming leg kid. Like, that's why he's the long field goal guy, right? And he came in for a 51, I think, on his first career attempt. So I don't, there's nerves, there's all this other stuff. He was well short of 51. He then came out and hit, I think, a 53 later in the game. So it's not that he can't do it. I think that was a little bit of like first career kick in a big moment type of thing. But the kicking specifically has been at a point where Mizzou is much more willing to go for it on fourth down than it has been in previous years, especially because last year Blake Craig was really good from 50 plus, and then the couple of years before that, Harrison Mevis was very, very good at long field goals. So it has really changed the strategy and the math of where to go for a fourth down from.
And I saw that against A&M. I believe I watched them go for it like two or three times on fourth down, and I was scratching my head just because, I'm kind of a geek. I'll start looking at the stats and stuff. 9 for 12 to me, 75% from 40 yards in, that 30 to 40 yard range. That to me is fairly good in, like 75%. If you're going to make it 3 out of 4 times, most fans are going to go kick the dang ball. Like, kick the ball, get the points. You're at 75% of the time, you're going to get points. That now analytics start to come into play there. Is the way that Eli Drinkwitz coaches now, is he just a lot more Have you seen him? You've been around since 2021. Have you seen him grow in the fact that he's a lot more aggressive than maybe he was earlier in his career?
He definitely is this year.
Yeah.
And you bring up 9 for 12. I think that's very situational,
Yeah.
where I don't remember exactly all of those kicks, but I think a lot of the makes came in kind of the cupcake games early in the season. And like one of the misses was to try to go ahead at top 10 at the time, Vanderbilt. And I can't remember. There was another pretty key miss. I think it was at Auburn that would have kept the game from going to overtime, and Mizzou ended up winning in
Yes, I do.
overtime. But
Yes, that's right.
it was a situation where, like, if you just hit the kick, you win. You don't need to worry about it. So it's been very much a situation where Drinkwitz is being significantly more aggressive, I think, because of that lack of confidence in big moments.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Is there anything you have questions about Oklahoma that you think your audience might want to know?
Yeah, I'll knock off my questions for you for my
Okay.
written piece that I'll put out Thursday. But I guess the first one off the bat, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, but John Mateer came back pretty quickly from his injury. I know he was kind of talked about in the Heisman race before going down. Just how's he been since then? Was there kind of a getting up to speed process? Do you feel like he's up to speed now?
Oh gosh. Texas was awful. And for the longest time he would say it wasn't my thumb, it wasn't my thumb, it wasn't my thumb. It's where my eyes are. I just got to get comfortable, blah blah blah. He goes on with JD Pickell, and at that point he admits that it was his thumb. And he says, but he had to fight. He said, it's not an excuse, but yeah, my thumb's involved. It's been hard for me mentally to fight through that. I think there has been some issues with his confidence when he doesn't have his legs, when he can't use his offhand to shield him when he's running, because he's always been really good at stiff arming and protecting himself. He couldn't do that. Couldn't do it against Texas. He was all right against South Carolina a little bit, but they didn't really use him. They used Torrey Blaylock a lot in that instance, and he ended up with 100 yards. But he's gone from being the guy that you lean on for everything to being a game manager. And I think that's by design now, that since he's come back, essentially Brent Venables has probably gone to Arbuckle, Coach Ben Arbuckle, the offensive coordinator at OU, and just said, look, we're going to play conservative on offense is what you're going to do. You're not going to try to take chances. And I've asked people, and behind the scenes, they've essentially said, like, look, probably could have had 7 to 10 more points a game if Oklahoma was aggressive like they could be. But when you have that type of defense, why try to be aggressive? Why try to put yourself in harm's way when you feel like you can win the ball game with 25 or less points a game right now? And that's kind of where their head's at, and why you've seen kind of this regression of Mateer. I don't think it's not like he's just been bad, because he's made some damn good throws. Like there was one against Alabama where I don't know how he did it, and nobody knows. And then I go back and I watch the playback and I listen to the radio call, and both of them are saying, how did he do that? I don't know how he did that. Sliding through the middle, getting hit, and just throwing a frozen rope across the middle and layered it. Like, if your thumb's bothering you, you don't do that, because you don't have enough control, because your thumb is your control point with the ball. So, yeah, he struggled to start coming back, but I think as you see, he's making throws. He's just not asked to do it the way that he was prior to it, because they figured out another way to win, and they're going to lean on that until they can't anymore. And I think that's the defense.
That was going to be the next question then, is do you think that kind of conservative offense game manager system is what they'll try to continue to do through
For
these last
sure.
couple of weeks of the season? Yeah.
For sure. But the problem's going to be is when they can't. Like, What if Prabula comes back and he's back to his full being him, and Missouri can put up 30 plus points because they have Ahmad Hardy at running back. Now, obviously, Oklahoma's played teams that are a lot like that in Tennessee, and they figured out a way to do it. How they do it is they turn the ball over and force you to, they first force you to turn the ball over. That's been kind of the thing. Ironically, up until Tennessee, Oklahoma was like second to last or third to last in the country in forced turnovers. And now all of a sudden, the dam broke and they're just turning everybody over left and right. And in big ball games, when you have to turn the ball over, their turnover margin was atrocious up until just recently. So, yes, I think they're going to lean on it. But my question is what happens when you can't? What happens when you have to get in a shootout? Can you just flip that switch and become the team you were prior to his thumb being injured and turning into this kind of game management mode type of team? Because I think they turned into that because they had Kent State in the bye week, right, leading up to Texas. Metier comes back. That was the first game they actually went full bore like game manager type mode, and it bit him in the butt. I don't know if they can do it. I don't know that you can flip the switch. So it's make or break with Oklahoma. I think you have to stay the course and be that the rest of the season. Because if you're not, I don't know that you can play tit for tat with teams right now offensively. I just don't.
Okay. Well, could you take me to through just kind of run through a couple of the key guys to look out for on offense for Oklahoma?
Yeah, I mean, you got Metier, obviously. Now, running back wise, look, Torrey Blaylock was the guy, and now it's Xavier Robinson. And for the longest time, everybody was calling for Xavier Robinson to be the guy, but Torrey Blaylock took it over as a true freshman. I don't know that he is 100% ready to be that guy yet. I think he's going to be a superstar. When it's all said and done, he's going to be a potential all-conference running back. Like, he has the goods for that. Unfortunately, in the SEC, freshmen just notoriously, unless you're like Ryan Williams or some freak of nature, you don't notoriously come out there and just dominate, right? Like, that's just not what happens. So since then, they've leaned on Xavier Robinson, who has balled out. Now, last game, he got injured in the third quarter. Early in the third quarter and missed quite a bit of the third quarter. And from talking to people, it kind of hindered the play calling a little bit. They had to change things up a little bit because Torrey Blaylock's a completely different player than Xavier Robinson. Xavier Robinson's a 6'2", 235-pound back that can run. He's always leaning forward. He's going to get you 4 yards. You hit him at the line of scrimmage, he's leaning forward, going to drive, going to lean forward. You're going to get 3, 4 yards out of him no matter what. Like, that's just who he is. Torrey Robinson is, or Torrey, excuse me, Torrey Blaylock is more of he's a power guy, but he's more scat speed power, like track guy. So different runner. Oklahoma's going to use both, but if Xavier Robinson's healthy, that's going to be the key. Is he going to be healthy? You're going to have to pay attention to the availability list when it comes out. Oklahoma's been cursed for 2 straight years on that, just so everybody knows. Like, you won't find a team that is as cursed as they are. It's unbelievable. But if he's on it, that's something to watch. If you're a Missouri fan, you're probably pretty happy about that because he can change a game. He's done it already this year. He did it against Tennessee. He essentially did it against Ole Miss until they fumbled the punt return and Ole Miss got the ball and went up. And then they won by, like, Oklahoma was going down to go up 2 scores with that punt return. Satania fumbles it, and he's been known to fumble this year. So, and that goes to the wide receivers. He's a great punt returner, Isaiah Satania. However, he's loosey goosey with the ball. Even last game, he got hit and he fumbled the ball out of bounds. Like, every game, I think he's got the ball punched out. So that's what Missouri is going to be trying to do, is try to punch the ball out when he gets it. But the thing about him is he's a game changer. He has speed. He's the wide receiver that caught that mesh route against Ole Miss and took it 77 yards. He is the punt returner that took it 45 yards against Alabama. Like, he's that guy. As much as he's loosey-goosey with the ball, he also changes the game because of his speed, and He's OU's number one wide receiver. We thought it was going to be Deion Burks going into the season. It's now Isaiah Satania. So Isaiah Satania is your one. Deion Burks is your two. The third has been kind of a juggle. Javonte Gibson's back. He was your number one during the spring. He got hurt, broke his leg. He's just coming back. And now Jermichael Carter has all of a sudden come on, number 84 for Oklahoma. Had two decent games, one against Tennessee, one against Alabama, to where he's starting to get more and more targets and more catches. So you're going to want to watch him. And then obviously Jaron Kanick, who is second, I believe, in receptions for Oklahoma this year, second in yards, former linebacker. He's fast. He runs a 4.5. He's a 6'2", 230-pound tight end, that 240 pounds maybe pushing it, I guess. I don't know. Not a great blocker. If he's in, odds are they're going to pass the ball, just so everybody knows. Like, it's a pretty dead giveaway, but they haven't been able to stop it this year, so they just keep doing it. Caden Helms is your other guy that comes in quite a bit, number 18 at tight end. He's a really good run blocker, physical. He's the guy that they can do multiple things with, but he's been injury prone. So there's a lot going on with the offense. And then I'm sure you want the offensive line. Little note there. Two freshmen. You got a freshman five-star left tackle, Michael Fasusi. You got a five-star right tackle, freshman, and Ryan Foje. You have a five-star right guard, sophomore, and Eddie Pierre-Louis. And then your centers from Jake Mikala from Stanford. He's your starting center. Wasn't the starter to start the season. Troy Everett hurt his leg, so now he's in there starting. Jake Mikala is in there starting for him. And then your left guard is, excuse me, I flip it around. Your left guard is, oh, it doesn't matter. Right, your guards is Eddie Pierre-Louis. They flip him every now and then. Eddie Pierre-Louis, and your left guard, I believe, is Ryan Foge, or excuse me, Fabechi Wewu. And it may be flipped, honestly. I can't remember off the top of my head, but those are your guards. Heath Ozaida will come in every now and then and play guard at either one of them. Doesn't matter. He's kind of their backup guard right now because Foje was their backup guard. At right tackle, Derek Simmons, who was one of the top transfers, he got hurt. He's had concussion problems. And that's why they moved Foje from guard to tackle. And now they just kind of rotate him a little bit, but Foje gets far more of the reps. So that's kind of where the offense sits right now. It's young, very, very young. They're going to return, I think, 9 of 11 starters next year.
I saw R. Mason Thomas did not play
I
Saturday,
don't know if
right?
he's going to play. I don't know.
Don't know.
I don't
Okay.
know. I
That was
think
going
he's
to be
going to
the
give it a
question.
shot. I do. If he doesn't practice Wednesday, he'll be out. OU has this like rule. If you don't practice on Wednesdays, you can't play. So that's going to be the
Interesting.
key. If he shows up as, I don't want to say, if he shows up as questionable, I think the odds are looking decent that he's going to play. If he shows up as doubtful, there hasn't been a lot of doubtful move to questionable move to probable under Brent Venables. So that's where you're looking. The good news for Oklahoma is that they have Taylor Wine, who just won, obviously, SEC Defense Player of the Year, right? Or Defense Player of the Week, excuse me. You have Marvin Jones Jr., former five-star Florida State defensive end. He's at Oklahoma. Should have been in Oklahoma out of high school, was committed, essentially silently committed to OU. Lincoln Riley leaves. He's about to take his official visit that weekend, and Lincoln Riley dips and he ends up going to Georgia instead. So he actually ends up back to where he wanted to be the whole time, which I think is awesome for him. His dad, who is Marvin Jones, Hall of Famer, right? Everybody knows who he is. Was also sort of committed to Oklahoma out of high school before he flipped to Florida State. So it's kind of funny how that worked out. One of them at least ended up at OU. So you have him filling in. You have Danny Okoye, who is a top 100 player in the country out of Tulsa that Missouri was heavy on out of high school, who has come in and just played like nails filling in. So they're really, really deep at defensive end. And you have obviously Missouri and PJ Adebowara, who Missouri was in on, obviously, former five star. So he's the those are your other ends. So it's not the end of the world for Oklahoma. It just they have to bring pressure, simulated pressure from other places when he's not in there because he is so quick off the ball. I'm talking about R. Mason Thomas.
You bring up, both of these teams, the recruiting battles recently have been pretty high tier guys. How do, I guess, Oklahoma fans view this game and like this history between Mizzou and Oklahoma? Do they see it as a rivalry like we were talking about with Mizzou fans earlier? Is it something that's come on stronger recently because of these recruiting battles? What's kind of the deal there? What's your read?
That's what I would say. The latter part's kind of come on lately because for the longest time, and look, Oklahoma viewed Missouri as a rival, but they like in the pecking orders of rivals, like they were down there. There were probably teams that were outside the conference, like Nebraska, obviously, even though they were in the conference at the time. Back in the day, you would go Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma State, and then probably Texas A&M, and then Missouri at the time would probably have been how it went. Kansas State fluctuated a little bit in that when they were really good under Bill Schneider, and they had some battles. Colorado was in there. They would fluctuate, when they had Bill McCartney and when they had Rick Neuheisel and all those guys and Dan Hawkins and all those guys that came through back in the day. But there was a lot of fluctuation there. And then, so Missouri was always there, but they never were high up. Now, fast forward to about 2003 to about 2011. Yeah, they hated them because they were always playing. There was always smack talk between them. They had some pretty knockout dragouts where Missouri would come in, ranked in the top five, where OU would play them in the Big 12 title when Missouri was number one. Like those type of deals happened. And that escalated the situation quite a bit between the two programs. It died off significantly to where it was like a nothing burger until Oklahoma goes back into the SEC. And man, did Eli Drinkwitz stir the pot. And when he stirred that pot, Oklahoma fans paid attention. The OU staff paid attention. And then it became a big deal. And it's become a big deal. So this game to them, there's a lot of chatter down here right now of payback. There's a lot of chatter down here right now of, you remember what Drink said last year? You remember the things that, Kane Green and all those guys were talking about, you remember Theo Weiss, who was an Oklahoma Sooner, going and essentially waving by and giving the bird to the OU fans after they win. And he was one of the main reasons why they won. So he can talk all he wanted. Honestly, talk it up. Talk your talk, son. You helped win the ball game with some of the biggest catches of the game. So, but the fans remember that. So yeah, it's escalated, and now you bring in the fact that they're conference rivals now, and Oklahoma has to win to go to the playoffs. Yeah, you're damn right. This is a big deal to them this week. Huge deal.
And then I know we kind of talked about it a little bit as expecting a defensive drag out. Is that kind of how you view
Oh yeah.
Saturday's game? That's what you think it's going to look like?
Yeah, I just unless. Oklahoma somehow finds the testicle fortitude to start throwing the ball deep again, which they haven't done a lot of lately. I don't think they took a shot downfield against Alabama, which goes back to my point earlier of how they're playing ball control, just kind of game management. Let's force some turnovers. Let's get it. You got a field goal kicker that can kick it from 60 yards in easily. He's a stud. Tate Sandell is probably going to win the Groza Award. He's made 21 straight field goals, which is an SEC and Oklahoma record. And on top of that, He's, I think, 4 or 5 for 5 from 50 yards this year. Three of them from 55. So he missed, the only field goal he missed was the very first one he took this season. That was it. I think it was like from 35 yards or 36 yards. He missed it. And then from that point on, he's been nails. So, yeah, he's special. When you have that, you lean on your defense. And Missouri has the same thing. They got the running game and they got the defense. And that's what I think both teams are going to lean on. Now, they have game changers at all, on the wide receiver, but can the quarterbacks do what they need to do? And that's weird to say because John Mattier was leading the Heisman race 6 weeks in, playing out of his mind, breaks his thumb. He played the whole game against Alabama with a broken thumb. The whole game. He broke it with like 10 minutes or like 8 minutes left to go in the first quarter. He goes 17 for 18, his final passes with a broken thumb against Auburn. So, but he never has been the same since the surgery. So they're going to lean on it. I think the defense from Missouri is just so good that it's going to be a defensive battle. And it's going to be fun. Like, not one of those boring defensive battles. Like, you're going to have moments where there's big third downs converted. And then you go back down. And if, let's say, Missouri has to get this first down to get the field goal range, right? To put them up or something to that extent. The crowd's going to get like those type of matchups, not that boring, just knock down, drag out 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It's going to be a fun, hard hitting, turnovers are going to take place. Like, this is going to be a fun battle. Exciting.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you just said. And that's all the questions I got for you.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this version of Behind Enemy Lines. My name is Brandon Drum. That is senior editor for Missouri Today, Kyle McCarvey, right? Did I do it wrong
McAvery.
again? McAvery. McAvery. I even said it. I even said it in my head, I'm going to say it right this time. And I said McCarvey again. How do you say it again? McAvery?
Yep, there you go.
I got it. McAvery.
You
I'm
got
sorry.
it.
I'm horrible at pronouncing names. I'm the worst.
That's
So
all right.
people make fun of it in the comments, and I'll take it. Whatever. I don't care. But I really, really appreciate Kyle McAvery from Mizzou Today on Three. You can go over there right now and you can subscribe for $1 the first week. All you have to do is type in MizzouToday.com and it'll pop up for you. So, same thing with OU Insider. Go to OUinsider.com, type in your URL, click that green button, and join us. $1 for the first week. Join the thousands of Missouri fans and the thousands of OU fans already on 3.com. All right. For Kyle McCravey, McCravey, McCravey,
There
Kyle
you go.
McCravey, senior editor for
All
Mizzou Today. My name is Brandon Drum. You guys have a blessed day.